Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Leaders Playlist. My name is Renee Craven, and today Anita Burke and I are discussing the book Start With Why by Simon Sinek. We hope you enjoy. Anita, hello.
Hi, Renee.
We are going to be discussing Start With Why by Simon Sinek today. It's a pretty short book, this one, published in 2009. It's about 200 pages. And the little byline on the cover is how great leaders inspire everyone to take action. I think to summarize the book, Simon shares a lot of stories to help illustrate why is important, why understanding and behaving in that way is important in leaders. And lots of stories, lots of the usual stories. I say usual, but maybe back in 2009 they weren't that common. Maybe they were pretty new, fresh stories back then, but when you read as many books as we do, you've got you hear the same stories around, you know, Apple and Martin Luther King and NASA and Southwest Airlines and Walmart and those kinds of organizations. So yeah, lots of stories to help illustrate why it is important to have that why statement.
I was going to say the same thing. I felt that the stories were, we know these. They've been used so many times, so often in examples in books and training and elsewhere. But maybe he started it. I don't know. Maybe that's where they've come from.
Yeah, maybe.
And I've seen so many of his videos as well where he talks about the same stuff and frequently uses these examples. So maybe that's where it's come from.
One of the ways that Simon structures the book is around a concept or a model that he calls the golden circle, and how why is at the center of that circle, and then the how and the what comes as a result of that circle. He describes the circle, the golden circle finds order and predictability in human behavior. It helps us understand why we do what we do. The golden circle provides compelling evidence of how much more we can achieve if we remind ourselves to start everything we do by first asking why.
And that why is often translated in corporate speak with a purpose or a vision statement or a mission. And he almost implied in the book that not every company had one. And that was kind of news to me. All of the companies I've ever worked for, it's always been the anchor that CEOs cling to and talk about and share, and it often gets reviewed every few years and they come out with a new one. So I was kind of confused that how is this why new? But maybe it was 14 years ago, maybe text again was different at that time, but or maybe it's always been a thing in Australia, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I know that organisations have a purpose statement or a mission statement or something, and then values that underlie that statement. But I've also been in organisations where they have that statement, but the people working in that organisation don't embody it. So they can tell me what it is. Yeah, they can tell me what it is, but I guess at the end of the day, they don't understand the why. It's more of the what we do, and this is how we do it, but why we're doing it, they don't understand. When you can ask that question, why are you doing that, they don't really, because we're told we have to, or because it's been prioritized, or because that's what the customer wants.
Well, that's how we make money.
Yes.
That's how we make profit for our shareholders.
Yes, exactly.
And he kind of addresses that as well, because he says that making money isn't a why, but it's a result of the why. You need a deeper reason rather than just making money. But if you're connected to the why, then the money will come. There was another piece, actually, that you mentioned values in there. And one of the things I liked in the chapter where he talked about values and guiding principles, where he said if you have to write honesty on your wall to remind you to do it, then you've got bigger problems, which I totally agree with. That's kind of like, often you see values in a corporate situation and you think, really? Doesn't this kind of go without saying? Do we have to be that explicit about those things? And the other thing you said was that your values should be verbs. So instead of having a value like integrity, you would rather say we always do the right thing. Mm. And I have sort of seen a shift in recent years to that sort of style of values in the corporate world, where they're more action-based and actually giving you clarity about how that looks, what that looks like to live that value.
Mm. Something I always try and do in teams, you know, here's the corporate values and here are the Scrum values, but what do they mean to us? And translating that into, not translating, but, you know, coming up with some kind of principle that is more action-oriented so it means more to the team members. I really liked his statement around leadership. And there was lots of leadership. I mean, it was kind of the crux of the book. But one bit that I highlighted that I thought was really powerful and illustrated the golden circle really well. You have to earn trust by communicating and demonstrating that you share the same values and beliefs. You have to talk about your why and prove it with what you do. Again, why is just a belief. Hows are the actions we take to realize that belief, and what's are the results of those actions. When all three are in balance, trust is built and value is perceived. That made me think about lots of leaders that I've worked for or worked with in the past. And I mean, it's interesting because it ties into some of the books that we've also read recently that we haven't yet recorded our discussion about, but why are you a leader and how are you behaving in that way and how are you behaving to demonstrate the values of the organization and the purpose of the organization as well.
Was that in chapter 6, the emergence of trust? I'm assuming it was.
Yes.
Yeah. Because there were some points he made in that chapter as well that I like the one that you've shared there, but there were some other points that didn't sit as well with me, and it might be the evolution of time since it's written that has changed. But he did talk about that he thinks we tend to surround ourselves with people who see the world the way that we see it, and that you should hire based on people who have the same beliefs as you and believe what you believe. We talk so much about diversity of thought and being challenged and how innovation comes from people that don't think the same. I think I know where he was trying to go with it, but it just didn't quite sit right, given I think you want a team or an organisation made up of people that are not all the same. Otherwise, how do you get new stuff?
Mm. One part of the book, a very early chapter, which explored assumptions being made in organisations about customers and even about employees and things like that as well. There's one part in here that I thought was really interesting. He says, if you ask most businesses why their customers are their customers, they will tell you it's because of superior quality, features, price, or service. In other words, most companies have no clue why their customers are their customers. If companies don't know why their customers are their customers, odds are good that they don't know why their employees are their employees either. Do you think the organizations that we've had exposure to understand why their customers are their customers?
I think there's so many varied reasons for customers being their customers. I think for the most part they do. The employees, but I might agree with a little bit more.
I had an experience yesterday with a private health fund, and I put in a claim online using their online app on the 4th of August, and it said, we've got a backlog of claims. It'll take 10 to 14 business days for us to action your claim. And I had no response, so I called them and they said, oh, we couldn't open one of the photos that you uploaded on your claim. And I said, okay, were you going to tell me? Or were you waiting on me to call you? And I mean, I tried the chatbot thing as well, and the only answer that it could give me was, you got to wait 10 to 14 days. And I'd say, I have. And then they give me the same response. You have to wait 10 to 14 days. So I called them and sat on hold for ages. And Long story short, it really made me question why I'm a customer. It's something that I've thought about a couple of times this year already, because that's not the only problem that I've had. But I have done research on what other private health funds charge, and what features and services they provide compared to the cover that I have now. And I still am getting better cover at a better price because I'm on one of those old plans, because I've been a customer for so long. It definitely made me consider, why am I a customer for this organization?
And interesting, that sort of organization providing service that you need rather than want, which also I think makes a difference. They know that they're needed, and that sort of changes the dynamic, I think, around understanding why their customers are their customers.
So the employees part, what didn't you agree with there?
Well, again, I think there is a diverse reason for why employees work for a company. Every employee's kind of got their own personal reasons. And I don't think that's understood well enough. I think there's kind of this generic view, isn't it, a generic employee value proposition that's provided. You know, you see it on job ads where they talk about the benefits, the parental leave, the whatever it might be that they think they're giving you as an employee that's better than other organisations. But not everybody's going to work for a company and become a parent. So the things like offering those things do not appeal to everybody. So I think there's a lot of mismatch there, that they tend to get sort of quite singular in their view about what they're offering, and it becomes quite a generic offering for employees that doesn't become something that's more flexible and targeted. There's a piece in chapter 8 in the book where the chapter start with why but no how, and this is where he recommends flipping the golden circle on its side, so it almost looks like a pyramid, I guess. And you see the three sections of the golden circle as layers. So he talks about the fact that it's three-dimensional, and doing that flip allows you to see that it almost converts to a hierarchical structure. So the why at the top being sort of what the CEO is sharing and caring about. The next level is the how. So it's sort of the senior execs that take that why, and which might be your destination, and senior execs take that why and find the route to get there. So how are they going to bring it to life? And then the what at the bottom of the cone is sort of where the doers are, the people bringing it to life and making it happen, which I quite liked. It sort of sits nicely in with some of the strategic design stuff that I've seen in the past, like ACDBs and that sort of thing. So I thought that was nicely done, clever way to look at it.
And it might be a easier way to explain the role of leadership to leaders as well.
Yeah.
If we're facilitating a workshop or whatever, and that topic came up, or it was an area, you know, specific that we were running the workshop for, like you said, it's kind of shows the hierarchy. So whether it's a very hierarchical organization or not, it doesn't really matter. You guys are leaders and here is where you align, and then maybe it's even identifying the different personas or roles or whatever on as an activity on that pyramid, just to help illustrate the point. Maybe.
Yeah. And it's just I'd seen some of the Simon Sinek videos where he talks about a golden circle and draws it up, but I'd never seen him convert it into that cone before. So it was one of the few new things I got out of the book. And I think during our regular catch-ups while we were reading the book, we kind of talked about the fact that there's sort of only so much to say on the why. he did sort of drag it on quite a bit, and it was a little bit repetitive, probably. Could have got most of the information in a short summary. But I do know people that just rave about
books. Yeah. Yeah, it's a popular book. Yeah.
Yeah, very popular. But perhaps we were already so familiar with the content that it felt a little bit much.
When I am running product owner training, we talk about the golden circle and the importance of why at the product level. So as a product owner, why is your product a product? Why is it something that you are championing? Why is it something that you're spending time on? So yes, there's different ways you can apply the lens. But I think at the end of the day, we have seen and we've experienced the power behind why, and when a team, at a team level or an individual level, when you understand and align and are on board with the why, you get this amazing motivation and camaraderie and energy to deliver to that why, or deliver for that why. Who do you recommend read this book?
I do think it's a good one for leaders if they're not experienced in this side of strategic thinking.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's probably dependent on where you're at in your career journey. But I do think it's probably, if you're new to it, if you're in your early stages, it's a good one.
Or even a refresh.
Yep.
Thanks, Anita. Till next book.
Thanks, Renee.
Thank you for listening to the Leaders Playlist. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please be sure to share our podcast with your family, friends, and work colleagues. Until next episode.